All right, good morning and welcome to the Local Foods, Local Places radio show, discussing the local foods movement here in the San Luis Valley. This show airs on KRZA 88.7 FM Community Radio every third Tuesday of the month at 8:30 a.m. And you can also listen to any of our shows at any time on our website at www.slvlocalfoods.org/radioshow.html. My name is Allie Jean, and I am the Outreach and Engagement Coordinator for the Local Foods Coalition. And today, I have with me Trudy Kretzinger, who was one of the original founders of the Local Foods Coalition. Trudy, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, it's my pleasure. So today, I'm so excited to talk to you about local foods because you have a long history of being involved in the local foods movement, starting with being a farmer back in the day. And so I'm curious to hear some of the rewards and challenges that came with that.
Okay. Well, John and I have been farming here in the San Luis Valley since 1990. And we went through many evolutions. And I think one of the greatest rewards to our farming effort has always been when we faced our difficulties, we came up with some of the greatest rewards. And I'm thinking of three of these main big things that we had to face. And the first thing was that our ground that we started out on had been in back-to-back wheat production. So it had violated for many years all principles of soil health. So we basically started with planting in a brick or concrete, you know. And so we had to focus on soil health from the get-go. And that led us down some really tremendous paths of understanding and people, and really began to understand that everything starts with soil and soil health, and that all life parallels soil health. When soil is healthy, it's healthiest when it has a diverse batch of plants growing on the surface. That stimulates rich diversity in the soil, rich microbial life, and all kinds of critters that grow under the soil, under the surface of the earth. And our human populations are healthier when we are more diverse. So that was the first big thing we needed to face, and we continued on with that. Then the second big thing was that over time, in response to a lot of different things, our water availability diminished on our farm. And so in responding to that, we had already brought livestock to graze on our organic crops for fertility. And we just decided that since grass used much less water, that we would shift more to the production of livestock. And that led us to finishing cattle on grass. And then our third big thing was that finishing cattle on grass, the way that we are structured now, our market structure, our distribution structure, our understanding, there was literally no infrastructure for marketing it, dealing with it anyway. We really didn't understand how to do it, how to achieve the same kind of eating experience that people were used to with corn-fed or corn-finished beef. It was different. So we had to really learn how to do that, and to do it with high quality irrigated crops and forages. So we had to build the infrastructure for that. And that led us into a whole nother realm and a really lovely business. We really enjoyed running our business, direct market and finishing the cattle. We had many great partnerships, and it was lovely. And we've retired that about a year ago. So it was great. And it was all from dealing with a problem. So that's farming.
That's great. That's an incredible story. I don't have much experience farming myself, but I I'm so curious, like the biological relationships that you were talking about with like the bugs and the healthy soil, definitely being critical. And then also like the local foods movement is pretty big nowadays, but wasn't always big. So I can't even imagine getting your start during that time. So my next question for you, Trudy, is about the Local Foods Coalition. And how you got your start with that, because you were one of the original founding members. And so I'm curious if you can tell us what that was like and why you decided to be part of those community discussions from the get-go and make what we have today, which is the San Luis Valley Local Foods Coalition, which includes the Rio Grande Farm Park, Cooking Matters, the Moki food truck that you might have seen at the Alamosa Farmers Market, and also the Valley Roots Food Hub. So yeah, tell us how you got your start with that.
Yeah, I grew up in the city. I grew up in Dallas, but my family was always, we always gardened and had access to farm-raised food. And so I've always loved food. We all loved cooking together growing up, and eating was just kind of a central part of our lives. So when we first came to the Valley, it was really hard to get local food. And I remember there was a t-shirt that the Valley Food Co-op was selling, and it was from a big carrot operation, and it was a great t-shirt. And I called them and I said, well, how do I get your carrots? I've got your shirt, but I want your carrots. And they said, well, we don't do that. We sell by the semi-load. And unless you want a semi-load, which I really couldn't use 40,000 pounds of carrots back then. But anyway, it was very difficult. Now the farmer's market was going, it's been going off and on for about 40 years, the Alamosa farmer's market. And then there have been farmers markets around the Valley off and on for that time, but it really did not exist. It was not, unless you just, you know, bought a beef from somebody, a whole animal or a half, it really didn't exist. A lot of people have always gardened in the Valley, but and then, so I was first just interested in eating. And then we had already, by the time we started meeting, we began meeting in 2008. And the first time we met, Melissa Fritschka, who was a young volunteer in our community like you, had been up to some kind of a convention in Pennsylvania. And she came back all fired up about what could happen when a community put together a local access to locally raised food. And she and Liza, Marian Liza, was involved from the get-go, and she was a great champion of this effort. So we started with a potluck, and there were 60 people who came, and there were all from all of the Valley, from every background. It was terrific. And it took us a while to get our feet up under us, but that's how I got involved in the very beginning. And then I had already begun to see what was possible, learning about what building a local food economy can do. So that's why I wanted to invest so much in this. And I'm so pleased and proud. I mean, a lot of these things. Like the food hub is tremendous, and the farm park, I feel like they're my grandkids or something. I really do. And I'm so proud of them. I am so proud. Food truck. I mean, I may be Abe Rosenberg's grandmother. I don't know. He was my next door neighbor for a while, but anyway, I'm so proud of him and everything that he's doing. So I'm really happy with the way things are going.
Yeah, and all of the programs are growing really rapidly too. Like since I've been here, I've seen the farm stand go up at the farm park, and yeah, we're building bathrooms and an education center already, and it's just like moving really fast. So I've been so impressed.
Yeah, it's one positive thing about the pandemic has really made people aware of the importance of food security and having a strong local food system.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Along those lines, I'm curious, you were here at the beginning of the Local Foods Coalition. What is your vision for this organization, let's say like 5 to 10 years from now, based on what you've seen?
Ooh, what a juicy question. I think the Food Coalition is really strong and has been from the get-go in education, helping people understand the importance of locally produced foods, but also helping people get involved in it as producers. That was the intent of the Farm Park early on. And I think that we can also do a greater collaboration with our institutions of education, both Trinidad and Adams State. They both offer, for instance, ag business classes. And if we had a core of classes, a core curriculum of classes that producers or potential producers could take and go through, that would really bolster their businesses and get their businesses off the ground. Liza is great about getting grants and administering them. And as a nonprofit, that's a difficult thing to get and to manage a nonprofit, but we have that status, the Food Coalition does. So I'd like to see us do more grant administration and also linking producers and other people involved with the whole food system to grants and possibilities that way.
Yeah.
And there are weird sources of money right now. You'd never know it. You'd never know it if you didn't explore it. And Liza's great about all that. So I could see us going down that road in a stronger way.
Yeah. And so everyone knows, when you mentioned Liza, you're talking about Liza Marin. She's the director of the Local Foods Coalition.
Yes. Sorry. Also, I can see the coalition playing a strong role in building paths to new crops, which we really do need to find if we're going to be able to add value to our water. And that's really important for keeping our water, is to be able to add value to it. A couple of examples of this are hemp, which we have a lot of acres in hemp. And then the other one is ancient grain. Where I see hemp, and it's a complicated deal, it's a complicated crop, and it's very specialized, and we do not have the infrastructure to deal with it, either to harvest it or to process it. But there are so many uses for this one crop. It's just incredible. And we have just scratched the surface on that. So I think that the coalition could be really helpful in pulling people together, identifying and determining what our issues are and where we need to go and how we find the resources to deal with that. Another example is ancient grains, and it's the same kind of thing. They're going to be smaller plots, you know, smaller acreages growing this stuff, but it is one of the fastest growing financial sectors in our agriculture in Colorado. So again, it would be specialized equipment for harvest and then milling and then cleaning and milling and then distribution. So I can see the food hub being a big part of that. And so that's where I would like to see the Food Coalition go.
Yeah. Definitely. And what you said about education earlier,
yeah,
really resonates with me, like giving the farmers the tools to start their own operations, basically. And we are working on that a little bit. We have agriculture and education coordinator, Erin Kaufman. She's a Mennonite volunteer, and she's working on that. And recently we put on a training with Dan Waldvogel about financial literacy And we did outside. Wow. It was cool. There was like an outdoor PowerPoint at the farm park. And the farmers got to go and learn about, some financial literacy topics. And I just thought that was cool that we're doing that. Because you're right, it is really important. This isn't just about providing the land to the farmers. It's about providing them with opportunity as well.
I also think that the Food Coalition can pull in partners. Mm-hmm. So that if you wanted to produce, say, flour from the ancient grain crop, you would need a processor partner, someone like Chris Gosar, who's cleaning and milling for the Jones Farm. That's a great partnership. And then Sarah Jones just happens to love marketing this stuff. But if she didn't, they could pull in someone who does. So building these partnerships, that's what it's all about. And it's so dynamic that
That's
so soup to nuts, quite literally.
Yeah, it's so much bigger than any one person can handle. It really is a year-round, like, fully invested thing to be a farmer. I'm learning. I moved from Seattle, so I'm a city slicker, you could say. But I knew I needed to experience agriculture, and so here I am, and I'm learning. Like, gosh, like, this is tough work. This is really hard.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Well, I'm grateful you're here. This is really wonderful to have you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm loving Colorado and Alamosa.
Good.
All right. So my next question for you, Trudy, is in a community-facing decision-making role, how would you tie local foods values into making change in the community? I know you are a leader in this community, and I'm just curious what your thoughts are on this.
I tie everything back to soil and soil health, but then immediately it goes into local food economy. And I see that building our soil health and building our local food economy are going to help us retain our water. And that's key. That's key for us. I see that building a local food economy, which really very few people understand or appreciate, could be our hope for the future. It addresses really the triple bottom line.
Yeah.
It's what's good for the environment and the animals. It's what's good for the people, the community, and it's what's good for our economy. So it addresses everything. So, I see that giving a voice to this in our across the valley is very important. I think that we need to build understanding and collaboration and infrastructure for making it happen. And it's just so important for all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love local foods because I feel like it's a topic that brings everybody together. It's really hard not to get behind local foods. It's like puppies and kittens. Everybody loves them. And I think it's
once you start talking about it in a way that's understandable.
Yeah.
I met a guy the other day. I had a waiter at a local food establishment. I was getting some takeout food for a group of people, and I was just really hungry for a hamburger. I went to this local food establishment. It's a locally owned place, restaurant. And they offer on their menu Salazar Burger, which is Lucas Salazar down in Manassa. And the Salazar family, they've long been partners of ours in all this effort. And they raise grass finished beef, and so they offer their beef in these hamburgers at this place where I was. And I ordered three of these hamburgers, and the waiter said, well, you don't really have to spend the extra $2.50 on that. You can't taste the difference. It won't make any difference to you. And my mouth kind of dropped open, and And he said, well, unless you have some kind of ethical thing about some grass-fed beef, you think it's ethically right or some stupid thing like that. And it was just like, oh, well, dude, I just happened to have made my living with grass-fed beef for the last many years, and I would love to talk to you sometime. And I'll go find him. But it was just like, before I depart this earth, I want to reach that one guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a million, not here in the Valley, but there are probably thousands just like him who really don't understand. For one, he doesn't understand the local food economy. And he doesn't understand pasture-based farming, mm-hmm. and it, you know, all of that stuff. So, mm-hmm. you know what I'm going to do, Allie Jean? What I'd love to do, I don't know. This probably won't happen, but what I'd really like to do is invite him to dinner.
Yeah.
Make him dinner and just kind of give him a little background on, you know, food history. I love food history and how we started going off the rails, you know, back in the Civil War, really, with the invention of the refrigerated rail car. They even came up, at that time, they came up with a human milk replacer. And it was,
of course,
isn't that gross? It was a product that was marketed as being the complete food. That when you give this to your baby won't need, your infant won't need anything else. And it led to terrible malnutrition and infant mortality. It raised infant mortality rates at that time. And I mean, that was a tough time. Our whole food system mm-hmm. went haywire because the South was pretty much the breadbasket for the whole country. And then the people who were farming a lot of those acres were fighting a war. And then the North was really caught without their food supply. So it was crazy and people had to get inventive and they did. But our whole food system started going off the rails at that point. The interesting thing though was that during World War II, that was the healthiest our country has ever been. And that was when it was, you know, there was a great effort to put in victory gardens and they were considered the most patriotic thing you could do.
Victory gardens?
Victory gardens.
I've never heard of that.
Really? Well, yeah. that's what happened. You know, we were needing to ship food to our troops, to produce food for our troops. And so our food production was greatly challenged. And so Americans were encouraged to put, and in Europe, this happened too. They had victory gardens too. And just put their backyards, rip them out of grass, take the grass out, just like Liza Marin did in her suburban home. I don't know if she's told you that story. She did this. She had a victory garden in the 80s, I think it was, or the 70s. But in the 40s, it was a big thing. And we produced Americans, whether they were individual efforts or community efforts, like a community garden, they produced 40% of what Americans ate during that time. And we have never been healthier. So that's something for you to look into, because that's a great moment in our food history. So
wow.
Anyway, that's what I'd tell that waiter.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how do you, I mean, that's, I see where the waiter's coming from of wanting to save a buck, you know, like I get that local foods are more expensive and that's the reality. It's just, how do we change people's minds to see that maybe it's worth that extra dollar, you know, maybe it's worth it to invest locally and in this community for practices that are better for the environment and keep the money locally. Because when we're buying that hamburger that isn't local, we're supporting an economy that is way outside the Valley. And If we really want to have a resilient San Luis Valley, we have to keep the money here. We have to invest in our people here and our farmers here. So I'm curious what you would say. How would you encourage the average Joe to become more engaged with their food, to connect with their food? What would you say to them?
Yeah, well, I'd invite them to dinner. But
I love that.
I mean, food talks, right?
Yeah.
And I think that what we produce here, because of our unique growing conditions, it also, we just happen to be really lucky in that our food, especially if it's grown in healthy soil, has so much more nutritive value. And it is, you know, food can be an extractive industry, a mining industry where we grow it. 90% of what we grow here in the valley is exported, which is not a big surprise. Mm-hmm. Because we raise enough just of potatoes to feed 6 states the size of Colorado. But interestingly, we import 90% of what we consume here.
Mm.
So yeah. Therein lies some really low-hanging fruit for economic development.
Absolutely.
And I think we start with that, but it's good. It's good for everything. It's just like grass finishing cattle or managing pasture. It's a loop. It addresses the whole picture. It's everything we need. And so I guess that's where I would start with someone. I would figure out what feeds them, you know, what is their connection to food other than just quelling that hungry feeling. You know, so much more than that, but
it really is.
Yeah.
Well, I would love that you would invite them to dinner. I think that's great. All right, Trudy, my last question for you, we're almost out of time, is what inspires you about this valley? You've lived here for a long time, and I want to know what draws you to the San Luis Valley.
Whoa. Just about everything about it, Allie Jean. And sometime when you come to dinner, I'll tell you the story of the frog spirits if you haven't already heard it. But it's just, there's a magical thing about the valley that you cannot name. But I believe that it is our the most mystifying thing about it as a farmer is our unique growing conditions. And plants that are grown here are challenged. We have great variance in our temperatures from day to night.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very short growing season. We have limited water and we have very intense sunshine. So what happens when plants are stressed is that they respond by producing phytonutrients. And there's a whole lot of science behind this that I can't keep in my head, but my partner John likes to call it hoot. You got hoot. And you can taste it in what we grow. If you've ever eaten raw broccoli that's grown like at the farm park, it doesn't taste like anything, any kind of broccoli you've ever eaten. You can taste it. The carrots are same way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the one of the most intriguing things about the valley. It is tough. It's tough to be a farmer here, but it's so gratifying because you know, especially if you have healthy soil, that what you grow is more nutrient dense than just about anywhere else in the whole world.
Yeah.
Except somewhere like, I don't know, Tibet or somewhere.
That is pretty amazing. Well, Trudy, thank you so much. For those of you who tuned in late, this is the Local Foods, Local Places radio show on KRZA 88.7 FM. Well, tune in the third Thursday of every month at 8:30 a.m. for the next Local Foods, Local Places radio show. And you can also access this recording at www.slvlocalfoods.org/radioshow.html.